RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, everybody, welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information, questions, comments, smart-ass remarks. Get to us. We love them all. And by the way, we answer them all. CrushPerformance.com is the website. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, Crush Performance. Now, in terms of social media, if you've been following us and following Crush Performance, we don't do a lot on social media. I mean, we're not, I guess, relentless on social media, but when we think there's something interesting, funny, or something we want to share, we'll get it on Twitter, Instagram, and certainly on Facebook as well. So do follow us, and if you have any topics or stories you'd like to share with us, let us know. Or if you have something you'd like us to investigate, please share with us. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea, and we've done that in the past. So we love it, and we're really intrigued by the ideas that have been coming in, and face it, we're just here to help out and spread the good word. I think our motto here, if we're to come up with sort of a personification of what we're all about, we're just about getting people thinking about things that they should be thinking about. And for the most part, it's to help improve performance, healthy living, and also to help the people around you. So that's what it's all about. So if you have any ideas, let us know. All right, today we're looking at analytics and data in sport. It's changing the game. And there's no question that it's running deep, and we're just beginning. The Moneyball era, I guess baseball would be sort of the start of it all, and the Moneyball era sort of kicked it off and made it mainstream. Data and numbers have always been around in sport, the Olympic level, no question about it. But in the professional sporting world, I think the advancements in technology have really allowed us to push the numbers to a new level. Now, is it damaging the game? And are the numbers that we're using accurate in terms of telling us what's really going on? There's a lot of mixed opinions out there regarding exactly this, and we're going to try to get to the bottom of it today. We'll be talking with Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. These guys have put together an analytic, a quality of pitch analytic that is perhaps more meaningful than anything else there when we analyze pitching. And of course, baseball is so entrenched in the numbers. And I think maybe one of the main sports we need to look at when it comes to using data to steer sport. Look what's going on right now. You guys have been watching the game. Even if you're not a fan, it's been fascinating to see the pushback from tradition and the advancements moving forward. It used to be, you know, when it first kicked off, it would be what kind of pitches should you throw, and, you know, for the hitters, you know, what does this pitcher look like in terms of the types of strikes and balls and pitches that they're using? And then it turned into the numbers game, where they started analyzing where hitters are hitting and where to throw those pitches. And it's turned into real-time decision-making that's sort of gotten away from the manager and the coaching staff. And whether that's good or bad, that's one of the major discussions that we're now having when it comes to analytics in sport. And it's a touchy subject. But we see the shifts in baseball. It's a really classic example of what's been going on. And to start with, it would sort of be, hey man, batter X is coming up and he tends to pull it to the right side. So a nice little shift to the right. Okay, no problem. Now, depending on the count, depending on the situation on the field, the shift can happen pitch by pitch. And that's not coming from the manager. That's coming from upstairs, the data guys. And every single major team in baseball has a gigantic analytics department now because it's such a big part of the game and it's everywhere. So for better or for worse, numbers are changing sport. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The numbers and data are being used in every aspect of the game, from player recruitment to fan engagement, believe it or not. And organizations are using the numbers to get a leg up, to get an edge on the competition, and that's what it's all about. And that's why this is a nonstop train. Whether you like it or not, it's not going anywhere because we now have the tools to give us some pretty meaningful numbers. And again, now we have to talk about which numbers are meaningful. Because if the numbers are being used to evaluate talent, predict outcomes and tendencies in real time, and to make decisions, where in traditional sport, the coaches would have that sort of live feel, it's now turning to more of a numbers game, and rightfully so. If you look at globally, professional sport and the sport market is worth over $90 billion. And this has just created a big opportunity for analytics and big data to get in there and really, really run with it. And that's what's happening right now. Has it gone too far? Well, I honestly believe, everybody, that we did. We redlined. It's like when you're really excited about something and you go way too far. And now it's starting to calibrate. And now we're starting to question some of the numbers, some of the great simple numbers. We see it in hockey. We see it in football. In baseball, they're questioning batting average. Is it really a good determination of a player's performance? Not really. Is ERA, earned run average, a good number to determine whether a pitcher has been successful or not? Believe it or not, no, it's not. So now we're questioning the numbers that we've used in the past, and we've created the opportunity for new, maybe more meaningful numbers come into play. And it truly is impacting every part of the game. I mean, baseball, again, sort of being the pioneer in the numbers game. And now, don't get me wrong, numbers have been a part of every single sport, but I don't think there's been a sport like baseball where the numbers are actually used in breaking down performances and determining how you're going to counterattack or attack an opponent. Well, take the strike zone, for example, and the technology we now have in terms of the pitch FX. And that's the sort of the box you see on TV that shows you exactly where every pitch is going. And the ump makes a call. Sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they're right. But as fans, we can see where that pitch is going. And if you're in fantasy baseball, holy cow, the fantasy world is going crazy, because now these guys who are running their teams can really use this data, because there's websites out there where you can get data on everything now. And I'm talking really legitimate data, the same stuff the pro guys are using to analyze their players and set their lineups and their strategies in every single sport. And now the fantasy guys are able to get their hands on that. So it's certainly impacting the fan base as well, which I think is really cool. Now, where's it coming from? Well, a lot of this new data is coming from, again, the technology. We say it all the time. The next areas that are going to allow us to push human performance to new levels is truly going to be technology. Technology and training the brain. And if we can get those two things down and really tap into those two things, we're going to see a new era of human performance like never before. And the technology is there. The wearable technology and the data we're getting from this real-time stats on each player in terms of speed, heart rate, acceleration, the recovery, all right? And it also can help us look at injury prevention strategies as well, which is incredibly important in sport right now. Hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on injured players. And if there's any way we can come up with data and analytics to keep our athletes healthy, I am all in. Let me tell you that right now. So the wearable technologies, and some of it is shirts, some of it are the little sensors. It's really, really important. And not only that, the live on-field data collection. And this comes from 3D cameras that we now have, and also sensors that we're putting in the equipment. And again, the sensors on the athletes. You know, we're tracking movement. We're tracking equipment, balls, and players, distance, speed, you name it. We're tracking it. Soccer is famous for this, tracking their players, how much time they spend sprinting, how many times they change direction, how intense they run over the course of the game. It's really, really entrenched in the world of soccer. But in the NBA, okay, they are setting up cameras in the arenas that track player movements and movements of the basketball 25 times per second. Imagine that. You're getting 25 points of data on the ball and the players every single second. It's incredible. And that's how far it's gone, because technology is now allowing us to do exactly that. So it's certainly helping us on the field real time. It's helping us manage our athletes. There's no doubt about it. But it's also helping us and organizations get insights into fans and fan preferences. There's data out there that can tell them, you know, what team they want to watch, what opponent they get excited about, when's the best time to air a game on TV or schedule it live. And that's the reason we're seeing some of the changes in schedule, especially in the NBA. If you look at the NBA schedule this last year, it changed dramatically due to the recovery strategies that we now have in place and the understanding that the old schedule was devastating to performance. We all know, listen, that in professional sport, I don't think there's one major sport where the schedule is truly designed for maximum performance. Certainly baseball is survival, but most of them, it's who can perform the best in that environment. Where we get to the Olympics, where hundreds of a second, thousands of a second can take you off the podium. That's where we're really, really getting some exciting things going on in terms of player analysis and using the data to maximize performance, because it's so, so important there. Every single second counts, and that can count for training that's 6 months out from a competition. So it's really, really interesting. And then there's one area that I just want to get to before we cut out for a break here that's really interesting to me because it's already stirring it up. Are the numbers good? And are they being used in the right way? Well, we know it's certainly influencing coaching decisions in every single sport. And it's also being used now in contract negotiations. All right. And of course, the data can be worked almost any way you want it to go. So this is a dangerous game to play. And we're already seeing some really interesting conversations going on when it comes to using this data in terms of player evaluation for contract negotiations. As a matter of fact, if you look what happened last year, we had a whole show on it about the NFLPA. They signed an exclusive deal with the technology company Whoop, which is a little sensor that the teams were using to collect data on their players. Now, some of this data was being used to sit players out and also in contract negotiations. Oh, this player has his speed is diminished this much, or his recovery times, or his injury potential has gone up this much based on the data that we have, which is a really, really tricky business. Well, the NFLPA, as we mentioned, they signed an exclusive deal with Whoop. Now, the NFLPA, their players are not wearing any technology owned by the team. If the teams want data on players, it's now owned by the Players Association and the teams. The way they're trying to work this, the players are going to wear this Whoop technology, which I think is banned in the sport, but they're getting away with it because it's a really smart little device. You can check it out. But the players are now owning the data. If the teams want it, they have to buy it from the Players Association. Ho, it's a conundrum, and it's an interesting aspect of the data world. So, listen, a lot of good things come from it in terms of managing risk of injury and injury analysis, helping athletes direct their performance, no doubt about it. But there's also maybe a questionable side as well, just like everything, moderation. The data and analytics world is now coming back to a point where we're questioning the numbers and trying to find out what's useful. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk to Wayne Griner of Quality of Pitch Baseball because they've come up with an analytic for baseball that is incredibly innovative, accurate, and tells a little bit of a story that no other piece of data does. That's coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everyone. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kreshel, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Today, we are talking data and analytics in sport, how the numbers are changing the game. There's a lot of mixed opinions out there about the data, which numbers are meaningful, what they're useful for, and actually how they're being used right now in sport. But one of the big questions is, what do the numbers really mean? Some of them are quite obvious, but some of them, and even some of the traditional ones, might be a little misleading. We're always looking for new ways to collect data and get better understanding of sport for player development, game management, talent acquisition, and also when it comes down to the business side of it, as we mentioned earlier, the contract negotiations as well. So it runs deep in the world of sport. There's no question about it. But there's always new innovative things happening around the world of sport, and baseball is no exception at all. So let's get right to it. We are joined now by Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. Wayne, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Well, since you and I have talked a few months ago, I've been really looking forward to having you on the radio show. We all know, Wayne, that analytics and data has taken over the sporting world. It's such a big, big part of the game right now. And as the dust sort of settles on that part of the game, now we're looking to fine-tune it and really understand what's meaningful. And that's kind of what you guys are all about. Maybe you can give us a little background on your adventure into this part of sport.
Okay. Yeah, quality of pitch really started back as far as 2008, when a company called SportVision installed PitchFX cameras in all the MLB stadiums. And it was at that point that we could really capture all the data we needed to start to quantify pitches for Major League Baseball. So the research started then, and in 2014, actually, the research was published by a magazine in California called Chance Magazine that focuses on analytics, and it really showed all the research that has gone into pitch quantification. And then in 2015, we were actually invited by Major League Baseball to present this research at the Sabre Analytics Conference in Phoenix. And Sabre stands for the Society for American Baseball Research. So usually any new analytic metrics or sabermetrician methods were brought to that conference. So we presented it there. Then in 2016, we did start to work with MLB teams. So we had a lot of teams that wanted us to calculate pitch quality for some of their rosters, some of their drafted players. And then last year, we started to work closely with MLB pitchers themselves and agents who were looking for this data. And now we're starting to reach out to the media this year and the general public, just letting them know about pitch quantification and the fact that we can calculate the quality of now any pitch in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no, a great story, Wayne. And one day we'll get back into how this all came together. It's just a great backstory behind how you guys started. But in the analytics world, boy, it's a big, big part of sport, as we mentioned. It's also an area of controversy, even inside of some organizations, as they try to decide what's important, what's not important. And then when it comes down to who's calling the shots, that might be a conversation for another day. But leave no stone unturned. That's my motto. And that's exactly what you guys are doing. Wayne, the sport of baseball has been really sort of entrenched on some analytics and just some data and even just some plain numbers that aren't really that meaningful. If we look at batting average and ERA and all these stats that we classically associate with baseball, there's so many variables involved. When you get down to the nitty gritty of it, they're not that meaningful, right? And this is something we need to overcome, and that's what you guys are all about.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes a QOP or quality of pitch quite unique, is that we're really, we're taking six measurements of every pitch, but these are things that the pitcher can control 100%. The problem with statistics like ERA, or like you said, a lot of the conventional statistics, is they involve a lot of things the pitcher cannot control, such as the reaction of the hitter, the defense behind the pitcher, even the umpire that is calling balls and strikes. Those things all determine those type of statistics. But when it comes to pitch quality, it is 100% determined by the pitcher himself.
So what variables are we looking at? We're looking at probably movement, location, probably velocity and these things. These are all things the pitcher can control. And this is also very, very important in terms of player development to understand these concepts.
Yes, exactly. So what we're measuring is for optimal pitch movement, because there is both good movement and bad movement. We also measure for optimal location of the pitch and then velocity. So there's actually six components to our algorithm. The rise of the baseball, so the baseball leaving the pitcher's hand until the apex of the trajectory or the highest point of the trajectory, that's actually a negative coefficient. So the lower the rise of the pitch, actually the higher the pitch quality. And to explain that, if you have rise or hump to the pitch, first of all, it does take longer for that pitch to reach home plate, which is a negative. But also, a lot of times hitters can identify a pitch type by the rise of the pitch and identify, is it an off-speed pitch or what type of pitch is it? Then we also measure lateness of break. So the later the break, the higher the quality of the pitch. So, for instance, if a pitch that travels, let's say, 40 feet and just breaks for the last 20 feet would be a higher quality pitch than one that starts to break at 30 feet. And then we measure total vertical break, total horizontal break. And what I mean by optimum location is the closer to one of the four corners of the strike zone, the higher the quality of the pitch. So that is also a negative coefficient within the algorithm. And then the final measurement, of course, is velocity. And it has a little bit of a multiplicative effect to overall quality, because if you have a quality trajectory to the pitch, by increasing the velocity, you just multiply the overall quality of the pitch.
Ah, the science of sport. We're talking with Wayne Grinier of Quality of Pitch Baseball. The website is QOPBaseball.com. You can follow them on Twitter if you're a data analytics type of a person or just want some great information on sport development. On Twitter, it's at QOP. Well, interesting stuff. And in the real world of baseball, there's a few applications here. You guys talk about, of course, comparisons. We talk about talent ID development. Injury prevention, though, is an interesting one. And I'm really very fascinated by this. Anything that we can do to help our athletes avoid injury, Wayne, is incredibly important to us. How would these numbers help us monitor or alleviate or at least reduce the risk of injury?
Yeah, great question, Jeff. When we introduced this metric in 2015 at the Sabre conference, we were actually asked by the LA Dodgers to present a case study based on their team, which we did. And part of the case study was focused on a pitcher for the Dodgers, Josh Beckett, who actually got injured that year. And what QOP was able to show is that his pitch quality was slowly declining through part of that year, and yet the velocity had not changed. So the radar gun was not telling them anything, but we could see that the quality, especially of his off-speed pitches, was starting to decline. What came out later was actually he did have a hip injury that actually ended up finishing his career. So what we were able to show is if the Dodgers had been monitoring pitch quality through that period, they might have actually shut him down before a more serious injury occurred. So we believe that pitch quality can tell a player or a team a lot about what is happening behind the scenes and identify, you know, those things that could be leading to a potential serious injury.
Oh, Wayne, this is great stuff. And I like it because we rely too much on that radar gun, don't we? This
yep.
is a very, very important conversation right here about injury prevention. And when you talk about guys like this at the highest level where everything is at their disposal, this could have made a big difference. Imagine what this might mean for a young athlete up and coming who's sort of just coming into their game as a whole.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess, is as young pitchers develop and their bodies continue to get stronger and they throw harder, that's going to come. But what our metric would show those younger players is, you know, what type of location they have on their pitches. Do they have good command with various pitch types, which is incredibly important? And then, you know, what type of movement really is happening with these pitches? Because obviously, like we said, if you can establish quality movement and location of the pitches, the velocity can be added later, which is going to, you know, increase the outcomes and the performance of the athlete.
Yeah, we're talking with Wayne Grinier from Quality of Pitch Baseball. You can check these guys out at qualityofpitchbaseball.com. Wayne, you guys have some fantastic information on your website. You can dig deep and spend hours there if you're a baseball fan. But I got to believe, you know, before we continue with our baseball talk, there's implications here that could fall well outside of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, we think this new approach to calculating pitch quality could be applied even to other sports. I guess I would give you an example. Would be, look at the world of tennis, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Where you've got you know, the serve being so important, but really there's nothing calculating the quality of that serve, again, the trajectory, the location, those kind of things. So, yeah, it can even go in other directions outside of the world of baseball. But we feel by calculating the quality of every single pitch, where there's over 700,000 pitches per year in Major League Baseball, and we've calculated the quality of over 7 million pitches over the past 10 years, you have such a rich data set that it allows you to do some analysis that just would be impossible any other way. But because we have, like I said, six measurements for over 7 million pitches, we can find some things that other metrics probably couldn't find.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think it's a very, very valuable tool. I'm enamored, and that's why I was so excited to get this conversation going, Wayne. You know, if we look back in history, we look back to learn, of course, we understand where we're at right now, and we plan to move forward. If we look at back at Major League Baseball in 2017, Wayne, there were some really, really telling things going on. It was a year that saw some incredible consecutive runs. The Indians, 22 consecutive games. The Dodgers had 43 wins over 50 games. We saw Aaron Judge tear up the first half. But listen to this, and this is where I sort of wanted to get your thoughts. In 2017, there were 59 complete games, which is the fewest in Major League history. We also saw a record number of home runs and a record number of strikeouts, a really interesting mix of numbers coming out of 2017. I'm sure you guys have thought about all this.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. Definitely the game of baseball has now changed where the bullpen is just becoming so important and starting pitchers just aren't going as deep into games. Part of it is based on the theory that, you know, second, third, fourth time through the batting order gives a real advantage to the hitter. So a lot of starting pitchers just aren't seeing those hitters for a third time. But, you know, with that too, with the power of the bullpen, you are getting pitchers that are a little more specialized with certain pitch types. So definitely teams are trying to negate the, you know, the hitters, the increased launch angle, increased exit velocity, and just this massive increase in home runs being hit. But like I said, even with those changes, what we saw last year was a decline in pitch quality, which was kind of shocking. It was the first time in the last 7 years that pitch quality did not increase. It actually went down. And what we identified, there was actually one key component that definitely deteriorated, and that was vertical break within a lot of these pitches. So last year, you know, as pitchers try to adjust and, you know, pitchers are throwing as hard as they ever have before, but at the expense of vertical break. So we really believe that that loss of vertical break is resulting in a lot of these increased launch angles and increased exit velocities by the hitters leading to these home runs.
Oh, the epic battle continues. And we're talking with Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. This is a great conversation for me because I love this stuff. We train our hitters to dominate the pitchers, and the pitchers have slowly been creeping away. But what you just said is really interesting. The quality of pitches have decreased. The number of strikeouts have increased, but also have the number of home runs. A really interesting conundrum for baseball people.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we calculate pitch quality independent of the batter. So we are not taking into consideration things like pitch deception or even batter anticipation. Mm-hmm. So what we do need to say is a pitcher can execute a quality pitch. And if an MLB hitter is anticipating that pitch, a lot of them can hit quality pitches.
Right.
So even though we have proven correlation between pitch quality and things like ERA or home runs allowed, you know, you have to also take into consideration things like what is the count, what is the score, you know, what is the intention of the pitcher, you know, what is the hitter looking for?
Sure. Hey, do those quality of pitches consider the fact that that ball was launched into the third deck or fouled off, or is it just strictly based on the pitching performance regardless of contact?
Correct. So what we are measuring is independent of the hitter or the outcome of the pitch.
Meaning
our metric could be used in a bullpen session, you know, with a pitcher where there's no batter involved at all. So we are strictly calculating for pitch movement, location, and velocity to determine the quality of the pitch. The other topic would be the effectiveness of the pitch. Mm-hmm. And that's where you need to start to look at what is the pitch context. Because obviously, if a pitcher gets ahead 0-2 on a hitter, he may want to spike a curveball in the ground and hopefully get the hitter to swing at it, to chase it. That would be a very effective pitch in that situation, but it would still be a very poor quality pitch with our metric. So we are not taking into consideration pitch context.
Okay, that's great stuff, and good to know, because the context of these numbers is very, very important. Listen, everybody, we got to cut out for a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue the conversation and have a deeper look at how we can make sure the numbers actually mean something when it comes to steering development and performance in the real-time world of professional and developmental sport. Right after this, stick around, everybody.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. We're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. Crushperformance.com is the website. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. Listen, if you have a topic or an idea you'd like us to investigate or look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. We've done it in the past, so we appreciate all the feedback and input. Or if you just want us to answer your questions or help you out in any way, get to us for sure. Right now, we continue our conversation with Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. Wayne, thanks for staying on over the break. This is incredible stuff. You know, we're always looking for innovative ways to improve the game. And analytics and data, of course, have become just a major, major part of every single sport. But we want to make sure the numbers we're looking at and using are actually meaningful. So here's my next question for you. You know, when we look at the developmental side of the game, I think the numbers could have great power in helping guide development in terms of what we should do to help young athletes get to the next level, and also maybe point them in the proper direction as to where they need to go and maybe what they need to develop right now in order to, I guess, maybe chase down their dreams, if that makes sense. How do you think the numbers and this data that you're looking at can maybe help a young developing athlete?
Right. So right now we have just been focused on Major League Baseball because, you know, within those stadiums, they have the TrackMan Doppler radar now, so we can capture all the data that we need. We are now just talking with some NCAA conferences. We're just starting discussions with the Pac-12, actually. So we will probably be calculating pitch quality at the collegiate level next, but then we anticipate it going down into the high school level, or, you know, traveling teams and that kind of thing. So we believe even for the younger pitchers, if they can see their six components of their different pitch types, they would then be able to identify, you know, where they can improve in each of those components to increase their overall pitch quality. So really, there's no limit as to how young we could take this. And the scale, of course, is going to change. Right now, the QOP average within Major League Baseball, when you combine all pitch types, is around 4.50. We might find at the NCAA level that may drop to 4.0 or 3.5. We don't know.
Right.
And then we would anticipate high school and so on. As the pitchers get younger, the scale is going to drop lower for the overall average of pitch quality.
Right, and just to clarify for everybody out there, your scale is from 1 to 10.
Correct, but there is no ceiling and there is no floor to that. So basically, if a pitcher could throw harder with more movement, we could have a calculation of 11.0, 12.0, and we do sometimes see some negative calculations. So if a location's really bad on a pitch, something gets spiked into the ground, you can actually get a negative calculation. But yeah, most pitches are in that, you know, I would say 3.0 to 8.0 range in there.
Mm-hmm.
Something very interesting, Jeff, over the 7 million pitches we've calculated so far, before this year, we only had five pitches that had ever reached quality of pitch value of 10.0 or higher. So that's five pitches among 7 million. This year, there's a couple pitchers have really stood out, and we actually have three additional pitches already this year that have exceeded 10.0. So even though overall pitch quality did decline last year, we are seeing some exceptional pitches so far in 2018.
Oh, great. We're talking with Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. The website is qopbaseball.com. And on Twitter, at QOP. A great question just came in here, Wayne, talking about variables to consider. One, the weather and atmospheric conditions. And you've already sort of alluded to the fact that outside influences are not considered here. And also another question here that came out along the same lines is, do you guys have a feel that there are, the changes in the ball are influencing your numbers? And again, the big conspiracy theory around the baseball, that's an interesting conversation here.
Yeah, great question. So the first part of your question, we are not calculating things like the changes in the weather and how they affect pitch quality, and even things like altitude. We did have talks with the Colorado Rockies because, of course, they play at much higher elevation. And, you know, what was that doing to pitch quality? So we've done some of that research on an individual team basis. But within our algorithm, we are not taking into consideration any changes in things like temperature, things like altitude, and those kind of things. So it's really consistent right across the board. So that would be the first thing. And as far as the baseball goes, like I said, we have this research paper we've just put out shows that there was a decline in pitch quality last year. And we think that could be a key cause to the increase in home runs versus something like the change in the baseball. However, some players have claimed that the seams of the baseballs seem to be quite inconsistent. Right. And for instance, if you didn't have the depth to the seams on the baseball, that could be one of the reasons for the loss of vertical break among the pitches. So we've identified the fact that there is less vertical break in pitches, which has resulted in a drop in pitch quality. What we cannot say is what is the reason behind that loss of vertical break? Is it the pitchers? Is it the baseball? That we don't know.
Wayne, would it make sense that maybe we're relying a little bit more on the fastball? I mean, if we look just simply at the 100-mile-an-hour plus pitches, you know, if we go back to 2008, there were 61 pitches in Major League Baseball in 2008, recorded anyway, that were above 100 miles an hour by eight pitchers. And the last data that we have was for 2016. I don't have the 2017 data yet, but in 2016, in comparison, there were 1,379 pitches over 100 miles an hour by 31 different pitchers. This quest for velocity is maybe changing the game a little bit as well. And could it be where we're lying and seeing more fastballs in maybe different scenarios in the game now?
Yeah, I believe so. But what's really interesting here is that when we looked at the six most popular pitch types thrown in Major League Baseball, so that was the changeup, the curveball, four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, sinker, and slider, the three pitches that had the biggest drop in quality were actually the high-velocity pitches.
Huh.
So the four-seam fastball, the two-seam, and the sinker had a dramatic loss in pitch quality. So what we're seeing is these pitches may be thrown harder, but they are lacking movement. So they are much straighter pitches, at least last year, than they have been in the past. The other thing would be location may not be as good. As pitchers are trying to throw harder, they may be losing command on some of these pitch types. So, again, we're looking at it from a perspective of six individual measurements of the pitch, not just velocity. So the one thing I will say about velocity, though, Jeff, we have identified some pitchers that have been very successful with even average or below average pitch quality because of their velocity. And what we mean by that is if a pitcher can throw hard enough and give little time for the hitter to make a decision, they can get a lot of hitters to swing at poor quality pitches.
Interesting stuff, Wayne. You know, and I think from the standpoint of deception as well, as you mentioned, those changes of speed from that fastball to a strategic changeup and just a little off speed can really, really be deceiving for the hitters as well.
Yes, and that's the one thing, again, right now we are not incorporating in this metric is things like pitch deception. One thing that we're going to be heading towards is adding pitch deception to a potential new metric. There's things like pitch tunneling now we can incorporate where the arm slot of the pitcher, you know, all the different pitch types look the same. So that obviously is going to improve the outcome a lot of those kind of pitches. So that's one thing we're looking at. But we really think that there's a whole new frontier we could be looking at when it comes to things like pitch deception. And pitch sequencing is also incredibly important.
Yeah.
So we have found some pitchers may have two or three pitch types, all of very high quality. But if, let's say, they're throwing all those pitches around the same velocity and they don't incorporate something like a changeup to throw off the timing of the hitter, then they can have poor outcomes to their pitches, even though the pitches are of high quality. So, the term, I guess, would be pitch repertoire. You know, if they maybe add a new pitch type, like a split finger fastball or a changeup, it's just going to make all their other pitches more effective.
Yeah, and I understand that totally, and it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, just another weapon in the arsenal. Even if you pull it over once in a while, it can keep those batters on edge because they don't know when it's coming, but they know it's there. That's a very powerful, powerful tool.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. One last thing, because this could go on forever, but I've got to ask this question because this is what I do. We look at developing the pitchers for sure. And one of the things I always emphasize, whether it's at spring training at every level of the game or our junior national team camps or whether it's working with the high school academies, when the pitching coach is working with the pitchers, I tell the hitters just to eavesdrop and listen. And when the hitting coach is working with the hitters, I get the pitchers to just sort of eavesdrop and listen as much as they possibly can. There has to be implications using this data to at least guide our hitters along as well, Wayne.
Yeah, so that's the other thing that we've already produced for some of the MLB teams is actually starting to quantify hitters even based on pitch quality. And what I mean by that is right now if you look at batting averages, of course, they're including all pitches. And within those pitches, there's a lot of mistakes that are made by pitchers, balls that are thrown in the heart of the plate or with very little movement. So what we could now do, because, again, this rich data set we have, is we can actually calculate a quality of pitch batting average, meaning we could identify those hitters that can consistently hit high-quality pitches, not just mistakes that the pitcher may make. So not only can we use this to quantify pitch quality for the pitchers, but we think we can use it to identify great hitters and those that have the potential to hit quality pitches over the long term.
Yeah, I agree. There's implications there for sure. And how about as a scouting tool? I'm getting just sort of an inkling in the back of my mind here. I got this feeling in my gut. There might be some applications here in terms of scouting tools as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because this metric can be international.
Yeah.
So what it would allow us to do is when we're looking at, let's say, pitchers from maybe overseas in Japan or Korea, where they're usually not known for throwing with the velocity of some of the North American pitchers, but some of them have excellent movement, they have excellent location, and this metric's going to actually identify and reward those type of pitchers if they have other strong components to their pitches. Also, countries like, let's say, Cuba, where we've had a real hard time maybe getting in there and actually seeing some of the pitchers within that country, what this would do is, again, be a real standard measurement as to the quality of pitches from any of those countries and put everybody on kind of the level playing field when you're trying to compare pitch quality.
Yeah, I know. Fantastic stuff. And in terms of, let's say, pro scouting Major League Baseball, if you had the quality of pitch numbers and the breakdown for your opponent's pitchers, you could really prepare your batters in a special way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that will be the next thing, too, is really looking at the quality of each of these different pitch types for the pitchers that you're going to be facing and, you know, coming up with an approach, you know, a game plan on basically how you're going to handle each of those at-bats. So, yeah, there's a lot of information here for the coaches, for the scouts that we think is going to be incredibly valuable. We just had a great conversation, a conference call this week with Jeremy Booth. I don't know if you know him out of Houston, but he's very involved in amateur scouting and clinics and things like that. And he wants to use QLP in the future as well.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Wayne, listen, great, great conversation today. Appreciate everything you guys have done over there. And we're looking forward to seeing QLP baseball sneak its way into the higher levels of the game. But I'm really looking forward to it. getting down to the developmental levels. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, everybody, there you go. Wayne Griner from Quality of Pitch Baseball. You can check them out. They're a fantastic website with lots of data. And, of course, on the internet, there are tons of data sites you can go into if you're a sports fan. Again, this is partly for the fan. I mean, for fans to understand the game, and certainly in terms of the fantasy game, this stuff is out there and available right now. And it's always great to see that we're rethinking and trying to make it better. And again, analytics is not new, but the way it's being used in sport is fairly new. So I have to thank Wayne for that. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Fantastic show. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. We have to thank Wayne Griner. And coming up in the next few weeks, to give you a little outline of some of the things we're working on here at Crush Performance as we head into the summer, we're going to have a great look at technology and brain training. There's technology out there that's now allowing us to look at how the brain is reacting real time in the world of sport. It's also helping us learn better, maybe recovery, relaxation drills, and it's changing the game. If there's one area that I believe we have a lot of room to improve in terms of human performance, it's certainly the brain. And we also talk about technology. Understanding training the brain and technology are the two areas that are going to push human performance forward in the future. The technology we now have is allowing us to do things in terms of brain training that we've never been able to do before. We're going to look into it and let you guys know how powerful and accessible it really is right now. And we've just begun. So really excited for that show. We're also going to do another big show on sleep recovery and performance. Listen, sleep's our number one priority. You guys all know that. But we're going to talk about strategies for getting better sleep. We're going to visit with some of the world's top experts. That's coming up as well. And then we're going to revisit, of course, the Crush war on sugar. How much sugar are we actually consuming? And how can diet modifications improve performance, decrease injury, maybe even save your life? If you look at some of the data right now that's out there and information coming out of the medical world, our high sugar diets are killing us. Hence the Crush war on sugar. We're also going to do a show, Run Like the Wind. We're going to look at how far we think we could push human performance in terms of running. And we're going to look at distance and speed and some of the records. And where are we going to go next in order to push human performance in the running world? Listen, there's companies out there that are doing incredible things. Again, we talk about technology. We're going to talk about technology and pushing performance in our Run Like the Wind episode. And coming up in the next few weeks, I'm really excited about this because it's an important conversation. The episode's going to be called Drunk and Stoned. We're going to look at the effects of alcohol and recreational drugs, predominantly marijuana, on performance and just overall general health, but mostly in terms of performance with the legalization of marijuana. What do athletes need to think about? What do coaches need to think about? And parents, what do you need to think about? It's going to be a really important conversation coming up in the next few weeks, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget to get to us if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or again, a topic you'd like us to investigate. Get to us, crushperformance.com. That's it for this week, everybody. Now go, get out there, and get better. Talk to you next week.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
Hey, this is Bobby Sue Doyle-Hazard, host of the brand new podcast, Leveling the Playing Field, a podcast truly focused on women in the sports world. It is for young women who are looking to get into the sports industry and women who are already in their careers, also looking to make a change. I want to put a spotlight on the amazing women that we have in sports now, and hopefully we can all learn a little something. I'm so excited to bring this to you. Please make sure to subscribe to my podcast, Leveling the Playing Field, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and with my guys at RadioInfluence.com.